Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Mark Wright of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And this is Mark's first time filling in for Jim, but it won't be his last. He'll be here the rest of the week. Mark, great to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
It's good to be with you.
Let's start with the good martini. And usually a Bill Clinton speech at a Democratic National Convention is not a good martini for conservatives. Despite all of our issues with Bill Clinton on policy and his strange and distant relationship with the truth, the guy usually gives a really strong speech. And a lot of people, of course, back in 2012 think his convention speech in defense of the lousy Obama record over the first 4 years really helped to get Barack Obama past Mitt Romney. So a lot of people were expecting big things from Bill Clinton last night. His role was a little bit different and in some ways unique because he wasn't just the explainer-in-chief, as Barack Obama likes to call him. He was also the spouse of the candidate. So his speech was supposed to be more about the personal side of Hillary. We've got one clip here on the personal side and one clip on the policy side. Here's the first one.
In the spring of 1971, I met a girl. After the class, I followed her out, intending to introduce myself. I got close enough to touch her back, but I couldn't do it. Somehow I knew this would not be just another tap on the shoulder, that I might be starting something I couldn't stop.
Mark, of all the phraseology that Bill Clinton could have used there, that probably wasn't the best. Rachel Maddow thought it was like anti-feminist the way he brought this out. So even the Democrats weren't thrilled with this speech. In some ways, some people might be wondering what relationship he was actually talking about. Obviously, the Clintons' marital woes have been well publicized over the years. It almost cost him his job when he was president of the United States. But he tried to weave the tale of Hillary's great contributions over the past 40 years for people all across the country in the context of this great love story. We'll get to the policy in just a minute, but I think the tedious biographical way that Clinton went about this didn't really resonate as well as a lot of people expected. And of course, for those of us on the right, we weren't quite sure which Hillary Clinton or what relationship he was actually referring to, because it seemed to be airbrushed pretty well.
Yeah, there's no question that if somebody's goal was to humanize and make Hillary Clinton more likable, maybe the medium for that wouldn't be Bill and Hillary Clinton's marriage. That seems maybe something we want to avoid if at all possible. The American people had to go swimming through the muck of their marriage for about 15 years, and I think that most people are over it. That being said, the entire idea that for someone who's been in the national eye, the national spotlight for three decades, as Hillary Clinton has, that we need her husband as a character witness to prove to the American people that she's not a conniving robot is very strange. You know, you would think that someone who's been around all this time wouldn't have to be reintroduced to the American people yet again. But apparently the Clinton campaign thought that, you know, you got to bring the big dog out and you got to bring put Bill Clinton's obvious political talents on display in order to try and get an at-bat in for his wife, who, you know, he clearly owes one to.
Well, that's certainly true. And that's a pretty common tactic in previous cycles, with the spouse coming out to tell you a little bit more about, in most cases, the husband, you know, Laura Bush and Ann Romney and other wives, both parties along the way. But with these two candidates this year, both Trump and Hillary, the family testimonials probably aren't going to do that much compared to previous cycles, because the American people feel like they know these people. And in both cases, they can't stand either one of them.
I think that's right. I think most people's opinion of both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, for better or for worse, are already baked in the cake. Very few people's minds probably were changed last night about when Bill Clinton stepped up to the plate and tried to explain to the American people that Hillary Clinton is not actually this nasty, calculating politician that most people think she is. The same thing for Donald Trump. You know, when his kids came up last week and said, oh, no, he's a great guy, he cares about people, it rang quite hollow, because most people have been watching Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton for decades now, and their opinion is pretty set.
So let's get on to the policy now. And Hillary Clinton, of course, In addition to being First Lady and a senator from New York, her most recent government job was Secretary of State. There's a lot of things that happened in those 4 years, Mark, but Bill Clinton decided to focus on these things.
As Secretary of State, she worked hard to get strong sanctions against Iran's nuclear program, and in what the Wall Street Journal, no less, called a half-court shot at the buzzer, she got Russia and China to support them. Her team negotiated the New START treaty with Russia to reduce nuclear weapons and reestablish inspections. And she got enough Republican support to get 2/3 of the Senate the vote necessary to ratify the treaty.
So, Mark, we go with sanctions against Iran for its nuclear program, which have since been shredded for the most part. So that is a legacy that's already evaporated, if there ever existed one. And then the START treaty is one where most conservatives think we got absolutely fleeced by the Russians on the new START treaty. Curiously, no mention of Libya, Syria, pulling the troops out of Iraq, the situation with Russia overall. The record's pretty dismal, so that the fact that Bill Clinton had to rely on those things that Americans probably aren't going to pay that much attention to shows that even he can't really defend her time there.
Yeah, that's right. It was very interesting. As Secretary of State, the Democrats like to say that Hillary Clinton is the most accomplished person to ever run for the White House, and that, you know, is apparently includes James Madison, who wrote the Constitution, George Washington. But Hillary Clinton is apparently the paragon of success when it comes to high office. But her tenure in the State Department is one of abject failure if you look at it impartially. What do the Democrats say that – what did Bill Clinton say that her accomplishments are? The reset with Russia, how's that going? The climate change negotiations with the Chinese and the Russians at the Copenhagen conference. Everyone agrees that the UN climate change negotiations are toothless at best. And finally, the stability of the world order under the Obama-Clinton foreign policy is a disaster. And so pointing to Hillary Clinton's accomplishments at the State Department is a pretty weak sauce, in my opinion. Furthermore, when you look at her, you know, supposedly accomplished career at the White House when she was First Lady, or as the First Lady of Arkansas, or even as a senator, the verbiage that Bill Clinton used repeatedly was passive. He said that she chaired a committee, that she engaged in listening tours, that she participated in studies, that she wrote a report. And none of this actually gets anything done. I mean, people like to see, Bill liked to say that Hillary was a change maker. Well, if your opinion of making change is writing a report or engaging in a listening study, well, that's a little bit different than my opinion then.
I guess so. Last aspect of this topic, and this really isn't Bill Clinton's fault. I think the speech failed to resonate to a lot of people based on what we've already said. But also, Bill Clinton, I think, just looks old. I mean, and he's getting old, and that's not really anything he can do about it. But he just didn't seem to have the same vibrancy. The voice seemed weaker. It's just not the same Bill Clinton when it comes to delivering a powerful speech.
Love him or hate him, Bill Clinton was probably the most talented politician of his generation. The only problem was his prime was, you know, New Hampshire in the fall of 1992, where now, you know, 30 years, almost 30 years on, he's just a little bit out of his element. He clearly still had some oomph in his speech, but anyone watching last night in a quite long speech, he seemed to tire towards the end of it. This isn't really his fault, but it does just go to show how talented he was back when he was in his prime. He was a very formidable opponent to conservatives. There's no question about it. And I think very few people on the right are displeased to see Bill Clinton perhaps moving off the stage because of his skills and his talents.
Yeah. And we kind of saw that during the primary season, too. He was not the magnetic figure that a lot of folks thought of him in the past. All right. On to the bad martini now. And prior to Bill Clinton speaking, there are, of course, a number of other speakers at the Democratic Convention on Tuesday, which now featuring American flags after the first day. Apparently, they didn't have any there. But up on the stage yesterday was Mothers of the Movement. And this was essentially a Black Lives Matter presentation on the stage at the convention. We had several mothers, at least seven, perhaps more up there, mothers of young men who have been killed in police-involved shootings. Some of the cases are more famous than others. You had Trayvon Martin's mom, Michael Brown's mom, Eric Garner's mom, as well as others up there. Maybe Freddie Gray's mom. I don't remember if she was up there or not. But anyway, they went up there and, of course, talked about the need to respect all Black lives and the basic theme of the night. And you see this with other speeches at the convention, too, when the issue of making sure that Black lives are protected huge cheers. And whenever people mention the need to respect the police, eh, not so much. And even David Axelrod yesterday in his commentary role for CNN, Mark, was saying that this was a missed opportunity for the Democrats because while they did have this time on stage for the mothers of these young men who were killed, they've done nothing. They've had no presentation whatsoever involving families of slain police officers, which is obviously a big problem right now.
There has definitely been an emphasis at the Democratic Convention on the Black Lives Matter side of the wider controversy in the United States right now rather than the violence against police. As far as the mothers go, I want to be careful in criticizing them too much because they are mothers in grief. They lost their kids. Whatever the circumstances involved, you can infer that they would take the side of their children. And I don't have a problem with that necessarily. But from an objective standpoint, Michael Brown was killed in a confrontation with police, but the grand jury chose not to bring charges against the officer. The Freddie Gray situation just this morning, remaining charges against the Baltimore officers were dismissed. So we have this situation where there is a lot of emotion involved. There may be even be a kernel of truth in each individual case. But what we need to look at more broadly is that the Democratic Party is choosing as a political tactic going into the broader campaign season to rile up their base on this issue. And they're not really playing it down the line. They're certainly not taking the police side on this issue. There may be a need for police reforms in this country, but I don't think it's fair to objectively say that all of these instances were the police's fault and we should automatically side with these kids' mothers who won't look at these situations objectively.
Mark, another thing that struck me, and I heard one other radio host refer to this morning, but it was a thought that was already in my mind, so I certainly want to bring it up again. When they talk about Black Lives Mattering and empowering Black families and certainly young people rising to the position where they have a chance to pursue the lives they want for themselves and make the most of opportunities, when you looked at the moms on stage and then you look at the names of the children that they've lost, only one last name of a mom matched the last name of one of the kids. And obviously, this is not meant to disparage single moms. They are heroic. They are heroic in so many different ways. I am married and I know how much I work and my wife works when it comes to our kids. So what a single mom must go through is amazing. But the rate of single parenthood, particularly in the Black community, but it's growing nationwide, is a massive, massive problem. And the fact that if they can't for some reason keep these families intact, that men aren't marrying the women before they have children, the fact that the communities are kind of in disarray because fathers aren't in the home, a lot of these kids got in trouble. Not saying they should have died in the way that they did necessarily, but they get into trouble. And that's how they have these interactions with police, because their lives are chaotic. And a lot of it's because the men are absentee. And that's probably a bigger issue than police reform.
That's right. Again, I don't want to imply that there is a need for no reform with in the criminal justice system or the way that police interact with young Black men. There may be things that we can do in that situation, but it is absolutely true that this dysfunction, the rate of out-of-wedlock birth, not just among Black Americans, but again, Hispanic Americans, and the growing number of out-of-wedlock birth among white Americans, is increasing the amount of children in this country who are not around any sort of a positive masculine father figure. And this is affecting the way that kids behave at school, that they when they behave outside of school, when they get in trouble with the police. And it's causing problems at a level that's much deeper than just the criminal justice interactions between the citizenry and the police.
Speaking of the unruly, let's get to the crazy martini now, also related to the convention. This is courtesy of U.S. News and World Report. Dateline Philadelphia. Left-wing protesters burned American flags, pieces of cloth, and when push came to shove, Bernie Sanders signs on Tuesday night outside the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. Unprepared activists quickly ran out of flags and other combustible material and requested donations in vain. What briefly was an impressive bonfire quickly went out for lack of supplies as police watched. In a short period of time, bandana-clad activists on two separate occasions torched flags. First, at around 8 p.m., a large group gathered as the Black DNC Resistance March reached the Democratic Convention's main venue after a grueling march of about 8 miles. "Bleep Hillary," a crowd melodically chanted, swaying back and forth as two full-sized American flags burned on a sidewalk. The very long protest march of hundreds, or over time perhaps thousands, featured many chants against the police and against Hillary Clinton on the same evening she received the nomination. There was also an Israeli flag burned, and we've seen reports of Palestinian flags in the arena. Mark, this is something that should not be all that shocking. What is shocking and what is crazy is the fact that the media is nowhere to be found on this. Not the liberal networks, not even Fox for the most part. Everything's all about what a historical moment this is for Hillary Clinton. If you had seen this type of flag burning and marching and shouting and all sorts of things in Cleveland, the media would have been all over it. In fact, we got more reports out of Cleveland where there are 20-some arrests than what's going on in Philadelphia with this mass demonstration. It's just like with the DNC email scandal. That was about a one-day story for most in the press, and this one is a zero-day story.
In my experience, there are two types of hippies. There are your live and let live, love and peace hippies, and then there's your mean hippies. What we're seeing in Philadelphia right now with the Bernie Sanders protesters is the mean, nasty hippies. This is Occupy Wall Street writ large, and they are angry. They are hot. It's very warm in Philadelphia this week. It's pushing 100 degrees some days. There's no way to describe these protests other than much, much, much more than what we saw in Cleveland. We've seen North Korean flags waved around. We've seen the flag of the Soviet Union and Communist China waved, burning American flags, burning Israeli flags, and not a peep out of the mainstream media, which is a pretty interesting situation, seen as the media, generally speaking, likes to cover rambunctious protests. The problem is that these protests are directed towards their preferred candidate now. They're directed towards the Democratic nominee for president. You can see that in the last couple of days, the media is attempting to close ranks and try to tamp down on the coverage of this so much because they don't want this to turn into Chicago 1968, where the Democratic convention convulsed in opposition to the more establishment Democrat because of the anti-war protests associated with that year, dissolved into anarchy. That is the last thing they want to see going into the final 2 days of the Democratic convention. They've already had serious problems with logistics and the planning of the Democratic convention, and they certainly don't want to see any more ruckus, especially tonight when President Obama speaks and tomorrow night when Hillary Clinton speaks. But this is a very interesting situation now when we have these protesters protesting against the left party in the United States. This isn't leftist activists protesting at the Republican convention. These people are protesting at the Democratic convention.
Jim Garrity likes to say the difference between the media watching Republicans fight and Democrats fight. With Republicans, it's like, oh, check out what this person said. And then when that happens on the Democratic side, they're like, oh, man, I just wish they could really get along. This is really troubling.
It's incredible. It really is.
And yesterday on CNN, I think it was Brooke Baldwin, they had this outdoor set and she had a number of Bernie Sanders delegates there. And she was out there basically saying, but you're going to vote for Hillary, right? I mean, otherwise it's Trump. I mean, you have to. I know you're upset, but come on. You are going to vote for her in the end, right? Whereas if some of the Never Trump people got on the air in Cleveland, I'm sure the questions would have been slightly different.
It is interesting, at least for now. Now, we are a few months out from the election, but a lot of these Bernie bros do not seem resigned yet to having to pull the lever for Hillary Clinton. It will be interesting to see what percentage of them defect to maybe Jill Stein of the Green Party or to stay home in November. But as of right now, they are not closing ranks and supporting the establishment Democrat as of today.
Well, they kept saying these conventions are always so scripted. This year, not so much. They have not been boring. So, Mark, we've got that going for us, which is nice.
Yeah, that's right. At least this year we can say that both the Democratic convention and the Republican convention had their share of problems.
Mark, great job. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks for being here.
Nice to be with you.
Mark Wright of National Review, in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.